at the end of the day, I want to help people that I want to help and that need to help. And doing this for 22 years has allowed me to be able to do that.
Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. Now let's get into today's episode.
All right, welcome back to the latest edition of the Human Advisor Podcast. I am your host, Tyrone Ross, where we sit with advisors and go beyond their book of business. And I prod them to tell their stories. I am happy and grateful to have my friend with me, Mr. Cali himself, Alex Chalekian, here to kick it with me for a little bit. So let's get right into it, man. How are you?
I'm good, Tyrone. Thanks for coming out here to Los Angeles. Really
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
It's not a hard sell to leave New Jersey at all.
No comments. Don't get me in trouble.
At all. So this is interesting, you know, to be able to sit and kick it with you because obviously we're Twitter buddies, right? Yes. We met on Twitter and... You know, we talk about FinTwit and the relationships that we build on FinTwit. We all have different practices and, you know, you push boundaries with technology, as do I and a lot of us that are kind of looking at the future of the business. But I just think let's keep it simple, right? For people to understand a little bit about you, a little bit about your practice and what you see being the next step for your practice in the future.
So I'll give you a little bit of a background as far as for those that don't know too much about my practice, but I've been doing this for 22 years now. And one of the things that I've realized over the years is that I'm constantly learning. Things are always changing. We have to be able to adapt. The Lake Avenue Financial, which is our RIA here in Los Angeles, was launched in 2014, and we've grown tremendously. We've done a number of acquisitions. We've brought in other advisors as part of the team, and it's been growing. Knock on wood, you know, everything's been great. But I really appreciate the fact that I get to have like-minded advisors like yourself and a bunch of the other ones we've met on Twitter. One of the things that I really enjoy about that medium is the fact that people like to share ideas and, you know, being in the business for so long, I'm kind of like the old guy now when I used to always be the young guy in the room wherever I went. And you're a little bit behind me. But at the end of the day, I've realized that I always want to give back to the industry, help educate, teach people stuff, kind of help mentor. And I never had that when I started in the business. So it's nice to be able to do that. And there's a lot of people that want to share ideas. You know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of the advisors that I was growing up with, it was very close-knit. They didn't want to really share any of their secrets or their special sauce. It was kind of like, this is what I'm doing. I don't want to tell anybody else. But now it's just an open book and it's fantastic.
So you mentioned something, right? We see hard pivot already. We just started,
but sorry.
One of the things that I really enjoy about you, and I've gotten to know you, you know, very well over the last couple of months or so, is you're a purposeful giver, and you're a giver, and you talk about giving. You're an advocate for people to give, and you know, before we were filming, you were telling a story of your grandfather, right? And I think a lot of people who are givers, especially people who give responsibly and give from their heart, a lot of that goes back to their childhood and what they've seen. So tell that story, right, about your grandfather and what that means with you working for clients and how that affects your giving, your desire to want to give.
Well, growing up, you know, my grandfather, he was my rock. You know, he was my idol. And I saw all the things he was able to do. He started with nothing. He came here to the States many years ago and brought the family and started from nothing. Started working at other places, finally had enough money to put aside, opened up a restaurant. But even if he barely had enough money to make ends meet, he was always trying to take care of others. And that was something that you don't realize as a kid how impactful it will be to you later on in your life. And I saw what he was doing. Even though they would struggle, they would always want to help the community, always want to help others out. And it was very impactful to do that. So I've kind of transcended and been able to do that. And then my mom is someone, same thing. You know, she has a heart of gold, and she might not have a dollar in her pocket, but if she did, she'll give it to somebody else. She's always helping, and that's something that's influenced me in my life.
Awesome. Now, as far as, and again, that's your constitution, as you as an individual, and again, we talk about how our backgrounds relate to our relationship with not only with other advisors, but with clients as well, correct. Right? And how do you bring that spirit to your clients and to your business and to your employees or the people who work with you?
Right. So one of the things is that we've realized, and I know you and I kind of talked about this in the past, is in our industry, we see a lot of the times the asset minimums or things that basically negate a lot of the people that really need help. And that's one of the things in our firm, I've specifically said, we will not have an account minimum. As long as the client is respectful of our time and is willing to learn and be educated, we want to help them out. Because I kind of transcend and I think about someone wanting to work with my grandfather and them saying, oh, you don't have enough money for us to really care or want to work with you, right? But they need help. Yep. My parents need help.
Right.
Everyone that I know in my community needs help. As long as they're willing to understand and be respectful. And the reason why I bring out the respect, because I've had situations where we've had clients that come in with millions of dollars and are not respectful of your time or treat you very bad or treat your team very bad. And you're like, you know what? We don't need this. You might have a lot of money, but that doesn't mean you could just walk all over us.
Right.
At the end of the day, I want to help people that I want to help and that need the help. And doing this for 22 years has allowed me to be able to do that. And that also transcends within our firm and all the advisors and our team.
Right. So again, you're very experienced. You have that giving gene, right? What would you say to financial advisors who are concerned about that, right? Well, I can't take on too many people with no minimums, or how do I scale, or how do you find a balance there? Now, again, right, you have the privilege now of looking back and you scale the practice, so you can do that,
right?
But how do you keep that same constitution, that same, you know, desire to want to give back as you're growing and as you're scaling? What advice would you give there?
And I understand that concept. Because at the end of the day, you can only have X amount of relationships before it kind of turns into something where your service starts to drop, right, for a client, and especially if you're a solo practitioner. So one of the things I've tried to do is build the team as we kind of go along. And yes, you're going to have the clients that have a lot of assets, but you're also going to want to help a lot of the clients that don't and need that help. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, frankly, are not ones that need a lot of your time, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a little bit more in the beginning where you're educating them, right? But they're not the type that are going to be someone that's going to say every month, I need to talk to you, I need to meet with you. They understand that. And that's why I said being respectful of our time and what we want to give. But doing some pro bono work, building that into the firm as part of giving back to the community, giving back to the people and being able to help out in financial literacy, mm-hmm. I think that's part of what you have to build into the fabric of their firm. So the advice I would give to advisors is you need to have that. And you're going to realize that those are probably the clients that you enjoy working with a lot more and you feel better about what you did and those accomplishments than the client that you helped take from $5 million to $6 million. Assets, right? So they were already doing well. They already had their plan going for them. Maybe you helped them out in a certain way or estate planning, but being able to help your clients that barely had anything get into their first home or send their kids to college or whatever it may be, or the first mm-hmm. kid that goes to college out of a family, that's the stuff that is going to help you when you look back in your career and say, those are the things I'm proud of.
Right. That's an awesome answer. And again, I think there's a lot of free jewelry in there.
Thank you.
And I think that's one of the things that is important to me is advisors start to understand it doesn't even have to be about giving up the bottom line.
Yeah.
It's just maybe an hour of your time talking to a class or going to an orphanage or something like that that's local to you and giving back. And again, there's a great spirit in the community on Twitter of giving now. It's phenomenal.
Sorry to cut you off. One of the things I wanted to say is, for me, it's not about the money. The time, I think, is a lot more powerful
100%.
Than the money.
100%.
I can easily say, here you go, here's $100, leave me alone, right? But if I spend the time and effort with that person, helping them out, whether it be literacy or charity or whatever it is, I think that's worth a lot more.
Absolutely. Yep. So let's stay in this vein, go a little deeper. So obviously there's two men of color in this business, right? And you know, black and brown folks are at the bottom when it comes to access to financial services. I can rattle off stats forever. Everyone knows that's something that I'm really passionate about. And I know I've had my personal struggles in this business. I've faced tremendous bigotry and racism and hatred. Talk a little bit about your experience as a Hispanic man in this business, because again, you got a little bit of an accent there.
I'm Armenian, not Hispanic. My wife is Hispanic, but that's okay. We're still brown.
A little bit darker. Talk a little bit about that, though.
So it's interesting with some of the firms that we've looked at of acquiring and doing some of this. One of the practices that we were looked at was not in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It was a little further out. I won't say the city, but when we had met with the advisors that were looking to sell, they were familiar with who I am because I've already done a couple of acquisitions. So, you know, part of their concern was how are their clients going to take it when an Armenian guy or a non-white guy, let's just say, is their new advisor. So I started to realize some of that when we were doing some of the acquisitions. If we go back even further, I started picking up on things that when I was meeting with clients, prospective clients, and working with them, and I would notice that they would not necessarily decide to work with us, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of them were working or had work with another white male advisor before. So I think in their mind, that's kind of who they looked at. So I started picking up on some of those things, and I've overcome in the way that I can bring value and I can show them what needs to be done, especially with the ones that you kind of got an idea that they weren't comfortable with the relationship when we acquired the practice from their other advisor.
Yeah.
But we won them over, and now they love us, and they're one of our biggest referral generators.
Right. So I've heard you mention this as well, right? You push diversity within your firm.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And how do you go about that purposefully? Right. Not to check a box. Right.
Correct.
We talk about, right, I talk about this a lot, representation, right, and equality as opposed mm-hmm. to diversity and inclusion. But
correct.
How do you purposely push that agenda? And I even want to say it that way, not push an agenda, but how do you make it something that's a fabric of how you go out and look at the practices you acquire and actually the people that you hire?
Well, luckily, being here in Los Angeles, this is very easy. This is a diverse city, right? You know, and when people come in here, you can see it's a melting pot. What the United States should be anyways. But we want to make sure we have the right people, number one, at the firm. But number two, it's important for me that we all don't look a certain way, that all of us are different and come from different backgrounds. So for myself, for example, being Armenian, my wife is Mexican. She also works in the firm, which you're aware of. There's another advisor that's Latino. There's another advisor who's Japanese. There's a Lebanese team member. There's another Hispanic team member.
Mm-hmm. No black folk? Come on, man.
You want to join? We'd love to have you, Tyrone.
Come on,
you
man.
Fell right into that one. But again, my goal is to have the right team
and for
us to be able to bring that mix for the clients. Because I think you and I have kind of talked about this. There's going to be certain things that people feel comfortable discussing with another member of their ethnicity.
Yep.
Not because they don't want to share with someone else, but they can relate.
Right.
Right. So for example, we have some Hispanic clients that will come in and Rosa will be there and they'll be able chatting a storm with them, whether they're talking in Spanish or whether they're talking in English, but just sharing stories about things and food and culture and all this stuff that I might not be privy to or understand or be able to relate as much as they do. So that helps them feel comfortable when they're in the meeting, and then from there, take it to financial planning.
Well, let me press you a little bit. You said you had the cheat code because you are in LA.
You're right.
What about an advisor in Kentucky? Or one in Idaho,
right?
What do they do, right? Or in Boston, right, where there isn't a lot of blended and diversity and mixing of people. What would you say, you know, or advice would you give them to kind of step outside of their comfort zone when it comes to not hiring in their likeness?
So move the firm from Kentucky to I'm just kidding. But it makes it a little bit tougher because obviously you have to look at the pool of advisors or other team members, employees that are in the area, right? If you put out an ad that you're hiring, it's going to be a little bit more difficult if every single person that applies looks and feels just like you.
Right.
But besides that, if you're trying to grow the firm and do something else, one of the things that we found is through the acquisitions that we've done, we've tried to bring in team members from the other firm. And if, you know, especially because they have the relationship.
Right.
So if it could be the opposite, right? Our firm looks like the United Nations. But I might go and acquire a practice in Kentucky and say, you know what? I want to make sure that someone that's relatable to the people here in Kentucky stays on board and wants to be able to help work with those clients. Because I might go to Kentucky and they might be like, who's this guy? But the firm or the team that's already there, you know, maybe the advisor that's selling can leave and that's their plan. But their staff and the team, I think, is a vital part of that acquisition.
Okay. So again, along these same lines, but a quick pivot. Again, you embrace technology. Technology, I think, is a major disruptor in this business. Do you think, all right, and this is one of the things we, you know, there's a debate on whether a cashless society is bad mm-hmm. for the unbanked, it's bad for inner city communities and rural communities. Do you think technology is going to help bring more financial inclusion in financial services, especially for those of us that are financial advisors?
By all means. I mean, one of the things that you talk about, whether it be the underbanked or the unbanked, a lot of this technology is going to help them. And I love some of the stuff that you've talked about that we might not even realize. Sitting in the cash check, check cashing line for 45 minutes after paying X percentage mm-hmm. just to get your check so you could put some food on the table for your family. Mm-hmm. You could be doing something else with that time, right? Going back to that time is valuable. So the technology helps us save in time. And that in turn can turn, whether it be to money or whatever else you want to do with that, even if you want to spend that time with your family or do something else with it that you enjoy and you're passionate about. One of the things we got to be careful with technology, especially in our industry, is it sounds great, and you can just kind of have too much tech in your firm where stuff isn't really working. And we've talked to Jason about this. You know, there's the integration that we talk about. Data you might think should be going back and forth, but it doesn't, or it doesn't in the way that you want to. So as a firm, we got to be careful where we're utilizing the technology that makes the most sense, and we're not just keep adding more and more technology and then just adding more and more costs and it really not giving us an outcome that we expected. So it's imperative within your firm, but as well as for the end investor or the end user, you know, whether it be anyone, unbanked, underbanked, you know, some of these things are fantastic. Being able to get an app and say, wow, I was able to set up a checking account. Until now, I never was, right? But some of the stuff that we've talked about, whether it be the Cash App or whether it be some of these online banking apps, it's made it easier and it's kind of leveled the playing field. So a lot of the dominating banks that are out there, the ones that we see at the street corners, all the major ones, I think they're shaking in their boots because this is something that they were not waiting for them to experience.
Right. And this is on top of the Fed announcing that we're going to have real-time payments, even though they call it Fed now, but it should be Fed in 5 years because they're saying it's going to be 2023. So let's do this, right? The Human Advisor Podcast is going to be about storytelling. It's going to be about giving. It's going to be about gratitude and appreciation. So I have to ask you, I'm going to ask all guests, and I'm so excited to ask you this because I know you're going to have a fantastic answer, is what is the one thing you are most grateful for that you wanted dearly or you were hoping worked out for you that didn't happen for you? And now you say, I'm extremely grateful that didn't happen.
Well, I'm going to go back to the story with my grandfather. Growing up, you know, both of my parents had to work, so my grandparents had a Middle Eastern restaurant that they were able to open up. It was somewhere that they spent most of their days. And this is one thing I think people don't realize when you say, oh, I want to open up a restaurant. You're like, no, you don't. Right, you're right. There morning getting prepped. You're there during lunch, mm-hmm. you're prepping for dinner. And there's like, it just takes over your life. But during, let's say around 3 o'clock when I was in school, they would come pick me and my brother up and take us to the restaurant. They had to basically babysit us until my parents got off of work so they can come pick us up. So I would spend a lot of time in the restaurant working with my grandfather. He would be teaching me all the stuff. I think it was implied that as I grew up, I would work there and take over the business. And he would just talk about that. He was the main chef, so he would kind of show me how to do things. And Unfortunately, in 94, when we had a big earthquake, the restaurant got devastated. And he was already in his retirement age where he basically told me, you know, Alex, it's not worth me just starting this back up again. Like, this basically devastated us. Like, everything is gone. The place got leveled. So looking back, I'm grateful for what my grandfather gave me and showed me, but I'm also grateful that the restaurant closed, because I might have ended up just being working at a restaurant. Wow. and being, you know, the chef. Maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, but instead I'm here changing lives.
Powerful.
So that's, I guess, my story.
That's deep, man. That's deep. I appreciate you sharing. And again, it's been so fun getting to know you. You're a powerful advocate, man. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate you standing behind me when I'm screaming into the woods.
Always.
About the people that I want to help. And I think this is the start of something that is going to be very powerful and affecting change. And this podcast is the start of that. And you being a guest is the start of that. So thank you for everyone for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one. I appreciate you.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the only all-in-one platform for modern financial advisors.